Radio Network. We've got a lot of good programs.
Network at the
Great.
Network at the
Secretary General back to the plane after clearing it for takeoff, so was not aware that it was on the wrong runway, a runway too short for commercial jets. The sole survivor of that crash, the co-pilot, remains in critical condition. Despite the demands of UN Secretary General Kofi Annan, Israel is refusing to lift its air and sea blockade of Lebanon until all the elements of a ceasefire are in place. That not only includes peacekeeping troops in southern Lebanon, but the disarmament of Hezbollah. Israel also wants peacekeeping forces along the Syrian border. Lebanon's prime minister says there will be no agreement between Lebanon and Israel until there is a comprehensive peace based on the Arab Initiative of 2002, which calls for Israel to return all the territories it conquered in the 1967 war. Israeli troops have reportedly killed at least five Palestinians today in operations to uncover tunnels dug by militants near the Gaza-Israel border. Another deadly day in Iraq, where at least 40 people have been killed by bombs, one of them in a crowded market in Baghdad, another at an army recruitment center in the Shiite town of Hilla, south of the capital city. Dozens were wounded. Pre-trial hearings begin today in San Diego for the seven Marines and one Navy corpsman charged with the murder of an Iraqi man in April. If convicted, they could face the death penalty. Three of the suspects in the alleged plot to blow up transatlantic jetliners en route from the UK to the US are due in court today in London. 12 others have been charged in connection with that plot. Firefighters are battling a 2,000-acre blaze in Southern California's San Bernardino National Forest. There have been some evacuations and several homes have been damaged, but the fire is expected to be fully contained by the end of the week. State Department investigators say the man who oversees the Voice of America has misused his office to run a horse racing operation and put friends on the payroll. Kenneth Thomason's renomination to his current post is pending before the U.S. Senate. And in San Francisco, a 29-year-old man is under arrest after intentionally hitting 14 pedestrians with his SUV, killing one. His family says he is mentally ill. Business news is coming up.
Most people would rather have a root canal than go to a dealer to buy a car. But you can turn dread into joy when you learn how to play the car buying game. Read the book, Right Car, Right Price, and you'll discover how the game is played and how you can win every time. Whether you're buying a car or a truck, new or used, Right Car, Right Price explains how to find and buy the vehicle best suited to your individual transportation needs. Auto Week called Right Car, Right Price the right stuff. So take the hassle out of car buying. Read Right Car, Right Price, and every time you get into your new car, you'll know you've got a great deal. Go online to rightcarrightprice.com to order your copy today. It only takes an hour to read Right Car, Right Price, and it just costs $10. We even pay the postage. So go to rightcarrightprice.com right now. It'll be one of the best decisions you ever make.
The Commerce Department reports that the economy grew at a 2.9% annual rate in the spring. That's worse than the winter pace, but still better than had been anticipated. AT&T says computer hackers illegally accessed credit card data and other personal information from several thousand customers who bought DSL equipment from AT&T's online store. The company says it's notifying the fewer than 19,000 customers who were affected. An FDA advisory committee is recommending approval for Gestiva, a drug designed to prevent premature births. Google's CEO, Eric Schmidt, has been elected to Apple Computer's board of directors, a move seen by analysts as a sign that Apple is looking at new strategies. The Census Bureau reports that the nation's median household income rose slightly faster than inflation last year for the first time this decade. However, that rise had little to do with paychecks, which were lower last year than they were in 2004. And Papa John's, the nation's third largest pizza chain, reports that its same-store sales for August are up 4.4% when compared to a year ago. Gold is up $8.40 an ounce this hour, $627.50. Silver is up 33 cents at
put on your gloves, because the work is just beginning.
Monday warrior, me strive. Today's Tom Sawyer, me try.
It's time to turn the conversation to taking back America. From the crusaders who have drained our treasury, created needless wars, and expect the working people to pay for their billionaires' games, it's time for the Bruce Birch Radio Program. Brought to you by the West Virginia Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. They are building the American dream each and every day. You can get in on the program by dialing in to 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. And now, your host, Bruce Birch.
Slightly abbreviated version of the show. We're going to do a kind of a quick wham bam thank you ma'am version of the Bruce Birch Radio Program today as we go straight into Bob Kincaid, and he's got something very special lined up for Halloween. So happy Halloween, everybody. It's already the day after here down under on the other side of the planet. There's very few things I actually miss about home, to tell you the truth. However, one of them is the stupendous recognition of one of my favorite holidays, Halloween. Because it's good fun for kids of all ages. what are we going to do today? Well, we're going to talk a bit about the Stern Report, and last night was lecture night, as most of you listeners know. We have the Fourth Estate Lecture Series, and it was a great talk last night, but a good friend of ours, you may remember, who did one of the lectures, Mr. Steve Keen, the Wowzernomics man, was there as a punter, as we say, we had a little bit of a chat because the Stern Report, you know, basically finally put a price tag on the environment, and that business, seriously, if they, you know, want to be in business in the coming decades, they are the ones that seriously need to start putting some investment in alternative energy, and the fact that, if they don't do this, there will be no business to be had. So, you know, I think that this kind of discussion is long overdue. Long overdue. Did I say long enough times? and aside from the, you know, going along with lecture night, John's a little rough around the edges this morning. Well, because John hung around and was a bit of a social butterfly afterwards, and then came home and edited out some audio really quickly. And got to bed about 3 a.m., and here we go, 6 hours later, I'm on air. But that's fine. That's all good. I find it interesting seeing the fact that at these lectures we have some of the same returning faces all the time coming to these lectures, and you can kind of see who's taking an interest in what's going on in the world, you know, and I don't know. It's. I find it to be good fun, even though management's trying to make it not so fun. But anyway, that's a whole other story. I'm not going to get into that. But anyway, we've got Steve Keen, whose book, Debunking Economics, which you can find out more about, Steve, at debunking-economics.com. If you caught his Wowzernomics lecture, you know, he pretty much debunks modern economic theory as something that is a bit of a fable. And he likened the parameters for having a steady economy as you're supposed to learn how to make the bike stand up without it being a bicycle, without it being in forward motion before you're allowed to actually ride it. And, you know, makes for some interesting thoughts and comparisons on things. So after we take our first break, we're going to come straight back and do this bit of Steve Keen audio, which I dig this guy, and we'll see a few hours later how rambling I was, because I really don't know. You know, you can get in on the program, as usual, by dialing 1-877-443-2366. That's 1-877-443-2366. And, you know, I'm wondering your thoughts on this Stern report. Is it even getting coverage in the States? Because it seems to be stirring the pot majorly here in Australia and in other, you know, hot spots around the world where, you know, we're really late in getting on the ball when it comes to dealing with our environmental problems. So as I hear the music coming up, we're going to take this first break real quick so we can squeeze all this Steve Keen audio in the next segment. So, you know, light up those phone lines for after the interview, and we'll see on the other side of this break as John continues to drink more coffee, get his head together to entertain you this afternoon, this morning, this evening, wherever, whatever time it is on your part of the planet. This is John Fox sitting in for the one, the only, Bruce Birch on the Head On Radio Network. We'll see you straight after this.
Routine visit to the pediatrician costs more than a minimum wage worker earns in one full day. For nearly a decade, Virginia's minimum wage has remained pitifully low at $5.15 an hour.
I'm a single mom and I have to work two jobs just to pay the rent and put food on the table. It's really hard.
America needs a raise. Help raise the minimum wage. Sign the petition at www.vafairwage.org. Sponsored by the Virginia AFL-CIO, working hard for all working people.
Recently on the Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network.
If you have tuned into this program by mistake right now, and you are a Republican, a right-wing Republican specifically, before this program is over, I do want to warn you, you're going to think that I'm the devil. You're going to think I've got horns and a red cape because I hate the Bush administration and everything they stand for. So be warned right away, okay? You're all warned right now that that's where we're coming from today.
Don't miss Guy James, weekdays, 3 to 5 Eastern Time, on the Head On Radio Network.
Howdy, this is Baxter Black. And if you're like me, you're concerned that the environment we enjoy today may not be around for our children and grandchildren. All the new technology in the world can't create more sky over our heads or new oceans. The Earth's natural resources, fresh water, land, and even the air we breathe are limited. Voluntary family planning improves the health of women and their children. It also helps slow population growth, which is good for our planet. So help ensure that people everywhere have access to the information and services they need to plan their families and help build a healthy future for us all. Population Action International is working to promote voluntary family planning around the world. Visit us at www.populationaction.org. That's populationaction.org.
The Bruce Birch radio program, John Fox, keeping the chair warm for Sir Bruce, who, I don't know, I sense a return, but I know nothing. Anyway, let's get into this interview. Like I said, talking about the Stern report that came out of the UK, and just one quick little quote from it. He says, talking about politicians, and what they're talking about in the United States, and he says, what they don't talk about is the dirty little secret everyone in Washington knows, or at least should. The vast majority of economists and budget analysts agree the ship of state is on a disastrous course and will founder on the reefs of economic disaster if nothing is done to correct it. And this is the environment that he is speaking of. So this is you know, paramount for business if they want to continue doing business. You know, for those that haven't figured out that you can't eat and drink your money, if you want to continue to have that money and make more of it, this is something we need to tackle. So last night, had the privilege of grabbing Mr. Steve Keen for a few moments, and here we go, me and Steve Keen at the Cricketers Lecture last night. Roll it, Bob.
Steve Keen, welcome back to the Head On Radio Network. This isn't Fourth Estate Radio. This is actually tomorrow. I'm filling in for a friend of mine, Bruce Birch, one of our regular hosts.
Well, it's nice to be back again.
And welcome back.
Thank you.
Your lecture has been probably the second most popular of all the lectures we've done.
Oh, great.
We've replayed it many times. Mm. People have really loved the whole Wowzernomics thing. Now, I was so glad that you came by tonight, and I was hoping you were going to come by, because, as you know, in the news over the past couple of nights, there's been all this discussion on the fact that at this global climate change conference, there's finally been a price tag put on business for sustainability when it comes to actually being able to continue to do business. Now, me being a raving greenie, and I do not look at that as being an insult in any way. Mm. I've known this for at least 10 years that we needed to, if you wanted to still be in business in 50 years, we got to change the way we're doing business.
Yeah.
Do you think that... Does this price tag mean anything?
Well, I think it's absurd to price the environment. You should rather environmentalize the prices. That's the approach we should be taking. But there's a lot of money to be made if you make something and don't clean up the mess afterwards. And that's been the attitude of a lot of business for some large time. And that's really regarding the environment as a sink that's so enormous that the sources we're pumping out can't possibly overwhelm it. And that works for some substantial period of time, but any growth process is exponential. If you're having an exponential growth process on a fixed environment, which is the biosphere, which is a tiny part of the planet we're on, it's not the whole planet at all, but just the tiny envelope of air around the outside of it that we live in, it's finally come home to business that that's very fragile. And now they realize they're starting to realize they have to be aware of maintaining it in that sustainable sense. So putting a price on environmental damage is at least a step in the right direction. But it's this sort of thing where I'm not sure the step has been taken in time. That's what scares me.
Yeah, I have the same fears myself. My second prepared question you kind of already answered, but the question originally was, is this giving business finally a context that they can understand? Mm. And it's not necessarily a price on the environment is what I'm getting from this, is a price on what it's going to cost to change over the way we power our society over, you know, the... You're familiar with the documentary The Corporation, I would imagine.
Which one?
The Corporation.
I haven't actually seen it.
Oh, you haven't seen
it? No, I'm a bad...
Okay.
Too much
I'll
time traveling.
I'll have to loan it to you.
You will.
They talk about externalities.
Yeah.
Okay?
Mm.
Externalized costs.
Yeah.
You know, those costs that many businesses will say are someone else's responsibility.
Yeah.
And environmental costs have been usually the things that are dumped into that.
Yeah.
Do you think that finally that's coming down into a dollar figure is going to make this look as a viable angle of investment for
our
business?
I actually think there's something else, and that is that people are beginning to fear the Antarctic ice shelf, the Arctic ice shelf, and Greenland. Because it's coming home to them, if we are dramatically accelerating greenhouse gases as fast as the scientific research is saying we are, and if that then has the projected impact on the stability of those ice packs, then you could see something like between a 15 and a 45 metre rise in sea levels. And when you talk that sort of level, Wall Street's underwater. And at that point, people think, holy Jesus, we can't afford to say this is somebody else's problem anymore. So I think it's had the same... It's a belated, slow realisation. That more so than the price, I think, is shot home. And one thing that gives you a bit of faith that maybe we might be able to do something about it collectively is that the same thing happened with CFCs some time ago, but the damage CFCs were doing to the ozone layer. That was scientific research. It was nowhere near as crucial as oils.
Right.
Nowhere
right.
near as crucial as carbon dioxide and the energy generation.
And in that situation, there was a suitable alternative.
Yeah, that's right.
That
we
was
don't
able to
we
be
don't
used.
Have the alternative, and the alternative is feasible, but it's a damn sight harder. It involves much, much more change to our capital structure. And people don't realize the extent to which oil permeates everything.
Not just everything.
Not just transportation and energy production, but computers. And the recordings we're making here, 70% of everything is oil. So it's oil and labor, the two commonest inputs in modern production.
And it even comes down to cosmetics, and it comes down to, you know, virtually everything.
Yeah.
You know, unless you pay very close attention to the labels on the clothing that you buy, much of your clothing is actually made from petrochemicals as well.
It doesn't matter if that's actually happening in the sense of making clothing out of it. What matters is if it's making carbon dioxide out of it. Now we're realizing that's really the dangerous thing, that we really are possibly pushing the biosphere into a point where it's going to respond in a quite a sensible fashion for itself. It's going to melt. And when it melts, then we unfortunately have something like between 25 and 50% of human civilization living within 50 metres of sea level. And so the way that I take the environmental, the economics approach, and I haven't yet had a chance to argue this because of the time constraints of my job, but rather than taking the argument that we have a responsibility to protect the environment, saying we've got a stewardship type role, in some ways, given the time at which we evolved on this planet and became the dominant species on this planet, our management of the planet has to now incorporate management of its current state. We can't let it fluctuate anymore. So all the arguments say whether it's a natural fluctuation or not, to my mind, are irrelevant. We have to, if we're going to avoid wiping out a huge part of the capital investment we've made in the last, really, 100 years, then we've got to manage the biosphere so it doesn't wipe it out on us.
Tom Hartman, who is a radio host in the United States and an author, and he's authored many books on ADHD and some other things, but I think his most important book that he's ever written is a book called The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight.
Last hours of ancient
sunlight.
Sunlight, okay.
And the ancient sunlight being the stored petrol chemicals, the coal, the oil, and the ground.
Mm.
And the fact that we're supporting an economy and a society on the ancient sunlight, as opposed to when we were more nomadic, that we supported it on more recent sunlight.
Yeah.
The wood actually burned, you know, from the trees that we cut down and harvested. That sort of thing. And one of the things that he claims and states in the book, and I think if you look with clear eyes, is very true, is that the Industrial Revolution has actually been a failure.
It hasn't been a sustainable technology. Yeah, we've been mining rather than harvesting. What we have to do to survive on the planet is harvest.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And I love hearing this from someone who's an economist, because
there's actually an ecological blog I'm supposed to contribute to it, and I hadn't had a chance to do it yet. I must apologize to the other authors, but there is, if you search for ecology and economics, you'll find a blog which I'm supposed to be a contributor, and I haven't had time to do so.
So you don't know the web address?
No, I can't think it up on my I'll have to send you an email, and you can whack it on the website. Okay?
I will.
But it's worth taking a look at, and they are making the same sort of case that you have to see the economy as being contained within our environment, rather than the other way around. So that when economists, neoclassical economists mainly, argue that we can solve environmental problems by pricing environmental assets properly, that's effectively seeing the environment as contained inside the economy. Now, the point of view of these people is that the environment contains the economy. And if the economy causes the ecology to react in a dangerous fashion for the economy, then it's goodbye economy. The ecology in a damaged state will continue on so long as there's sunlight falling on the planet's surface. But it doesn't work the other way around. And we don't know what the tipping points are. This is the thing which worries me about timing. Because if it's the case that we've put sufficient carbon dioxide into the atmosphere to guarantee the collapse of the Antarctic ice shelves and Greenland and the Arctic, then we're going to have ice sheets moving into the ocean and gradually adding up to ocean levels. And we don't know how to freeze things down. As a species, we're fantastically good at heating things up. We have no damn idea of how to cool things down. And if we got the timing wrong, even by 1 year, it's too late. That's what scares me.
It's one of these situations where 10 years ago I was called a wacko, and now I'm being looked at as someone who has a clue.
Mm.
The big buck up against renewable sources of energy has always been the cost.
Yeah.
And I'm really I'm hoping that this new kind of insight or context in the fact of saying to business, you know, we only have so many more years that we can maintain this kind of raping the planet and making money. And, you know, you're not going to be able to eat and drink your cash when it all runs out. I'm hoping that this is going to finally turn things to where we get real investment. I mean, what just happened this week, you know, Channel 7's The Sunrise program has had this fantastic bit of promotion on Fool the Globe, and they had this online petition to petition the federal government not to cut the solar rebates.
Yeah.
And within 3 weeks, it went from 20,000 signatures to almost 180,000 signatures, right? And it got action. So and suddenly we have a plan for the largest ever solar power generation plant on the planet.
Yeah.
45,000 homes. But yet, there's things connected in that legislation that give 3 times or 4 times as much money, off the top of my head, to something that has never been seen yet, which is clean coal.
Yeah, yeah.
To me, this is not sound business.
No, it's reactionary thinking. And I mean, the Howard government, trashed a huge number of environmental programs and research areas. And I mean, what's really offended me as an Australian is that there were some brilliant technologies being developed here, which have been living on a shoestring for the last 10 to 15 years.
And most of it's gone overseas for development.
We lost
too.
New South Wales University has a guy, I think he's Professor Green, which is an amazing name for somebody working in solar technology, but produced the world's most efficient solar technology cells.
Right.
And it takes investment, it takes time to work out how to produce those things more cheaply. You have to go through serious iterations, and you need a serious amount of money to make that happen. That hasn't been provided, so he's been doing on a shoestring. He's still the most efficient power cells, but one of his students went back to China and is now producing low-cost silicon in China. So China is now doing the exports. China, touted as a great polluter by Australia, has actually done more to generate production of clean energy in a technological sense than we could have done. So it's been very, very backward thinking. It's a backflip. Hopefully it's a fast enough backflip to make an impact. But we should be pouring huge amounts of money into that, because picking winners or not, it's a no-brainer that we have to solve that problem. Whoever solves it first, it might not be us, but whoever solves it first is going to be on an economic cusp of great magnitude. And it's doable. We know that there's sufficient energy coming in from the sun to more than power our needs. Also at the same university, I work at the University of Western Sydney, as you know, but this is research at New South Wales University, into high-capacity battery storage. The combination of the two, solar power plus battery, is what you need. And when you lose a huge amount of power, people aren't aware of how much is lost by transmission from power stations. So to be able to do it in-house, on roof, and then store it in batteries
is quite feasible. I've had this discussion with one of my best friends.
Yeah.
Like, hands-down best friends is an electrician for Integral.
Yeah.
And we've talked about, you know, getting the property and doing the off-the-grid thing, and he keeps talking about the electric and the transmission loss.
Yeah, a huge.
And it took me, and he's not wrong, but it took me a good couple of months talking to him about the fact that we have to start changing the way we think about this power generation and generating it more locally for locally than from some sort of central generation point and trying to distribute it is part of the learning curve that we need to get around if we're going to make this work.
We've
got to get past this idea of, you know, I mean, he's building substations all the time, which is great. I mean, it's wonderful technology. It's incredible stuff. But when we move into this idea of renewable power, that's not necessarily going to be the way to do it. It's going to have to be much more local for local than central for the outskirts.
Yeah, and we're going to increase the cost of production of a large number of technologies that way, but it's going to increase the cost of living. And that may mean that labour has to get a higher wage simply to stay alive. And that's actually not a bad thing, given the distribution that's gone from wages to profits in the last 25 to 30 years. Reversing that may be part of the inevitable outcome. But again, it's a bit like the situation I see with debt, which is the main area that I research technically.
Right.
The old saying was once, the Keynes had, maybe he was responsible for the saying that if you owe the bank $100, you have a problem. If you owe the bank $1 million, the bank has a problem. And therefore, when you get that level of debt, then the banks are forced to take indebtedness seriously. If you have the possibility of capitalism being wiped out by environmental degradation, then capitalists have a problem which they have to address by perhaps coping with higher costs, which also include higher costs for labour, because the cost of staying alive is going to rise. But the alternative is we all die, and the people who've got the waterside views aren't the workers.
Steve Keane, thank you so much.
Thanks, really, John. Good
great
time.
To talk to you again.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Good night. All right, and that was Steve Keane, as we're going to go out to our bottom of the hour break, kind of minorly late, but just a really great guy to talk to. And, you know, this guy's view on economics, I think, is very, very sound and much more realistic than most. But you're listening to the Bruce Burch radio program on the Head-On Radio Network. If you have anything to say about all this, you can get in on the program at 1-877-443-2366. And we'll see you on the other side of this break.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Huh?
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive Magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can also listen to over at Progressive.org. You know Bush is getting desperate when he whips out the terrorist card, but that's what he and Cheney and Melman have been doing for weeks now. In fact, the whole effort to pass the Military Commissions Act was a cynical ploy to say that Democrats are soft on terror. On the campaign trail, Bush repeatedly brings up this un-American law, which allows the president to lock up any non-citizen for life without trial, and allows the president himself to decide what is torture and what is not. Bush says anyone who voted against this law doesn't even want to question terrorists who we capture. But that's not true. Everyone wants to question them. The point is whether the U.S. will stoop to torture them. Bush sure will. He'll stoop to anything. Then Bush says that Democrats who oppose his illegal NSA wiretapping don't even want to intercept calls from suspected terrorists into the United States. But that's not true either. All they want is for Bush to get a warrant to do so, as required by law, which allows him, anyway, a 72-hour grace period. Now, Bush says, the Democrat approach in Iraq comes down to this. The terrorists win and America loses. But the terrorists are winning every day the U.S. remains there, as the Iraq War is a recruiting call and a training ground for them, as even the CIA now admits. To slander his opponents essentially as coddlers of terrorists is about as low as Bush has gone yet. He may go further, though. There is no bottom to his slime barrel. I'm Matt Rothschild. And that's how I see it.
We look to the day when you can live in freedom, and America and Iran can be good friends and close partners in the cause of peace.
See, this is where we get a really bad reputation. I live in a country where I'm not even sure if my vote's going to count in November. How free are you? How free are the people on the Gulf Coast? How free are the families that still grieve for the bodies dragged out of Aracoma and Sago? How free are they? He throws around precious terms with precious little regard for them. How free are we that chose by a wide margin in the year 2000, November 2000, we chose a man named Al Gore to be the President of the United States? How free are we that we were saddled with this ignorant, ignorant, hateful little man? How free are we? How free?
I'm Bob Kincaid. Join me weeknights, 7 to 10 Eastern, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the Bruce Birch Radio Program. John Fox here in Sydney on a, what is it, Wednesday morning. The sun's shining bright, got blue sky. We could seriously use a little less of that. We could use some gray skies and a whole lot of rain. Now, what, this is the second time that I've been doing the show in about the past week or so. And you'll notice that I'm not really getting into the whole election thing. And current politics in the States, and that's half a conscious decision and half just there's only so much I can pay attention to at the moment. But, you know, I sit there and I listen to Guy James or, you know, Bob doing his show, and I reckon they've got it covered. There's nothing that I can really add to the conversation because, well, I'm not there, and there are some times that I so wish I was, because I, you know, if I was actually there, I think you all would be worried about my safety because I would be on the ground in this battle to take back the American democracy. And when the time comes, I do come back home. If this insanity is still going on, I will be doing that. However, I'm not there. It's all local races. You know, I can sit there and talk about California, which is, you know, the bit that I get to play in. But I would just find that it was killing time, and that's not what we're here to do. So I've been focusing, no surprise, on the environment because I personally believe this is issue number one. And there's something very, very slack about the world population, the fact that we just have not been paying attention to the elephant in the room. There is no larger issue than the environment. And personally, and I've said this before, you know, I've said it on Fourth Estate Radio, Bruce and I have talked about it many times, that if the environment isn't actually number one on your list of issues, you are being slack. Because without a functioning planet, we're, to use nothing but a better term, boned. We're nowhere. You know, I've got a young son, and although, you know, he lives in a different country than where I reside, I shiver at the prospects of what he's going to have to combat when he's my age. You know, and in the grand scheme of things, I'm not even old yet. But, you know, I know that this has always fallen under the it's too hard thing, and not saying with you know, the listeners to this program and to this network, you know, y'all are just, I reckon this is one of those rare times where I can assume and be fairly correct in that, you know, most of you are above average when it comes to your environmental awareness, but we don't have the coverage, we don't have the airtime at all. And a great example of this is, I think it was in 96, you know, the scientists of the world got together and, you know, wrote this paper saying, you know, wake up everybody, we got 10 years to turn this mess around before we're not going to be able to turn it around anymore, before it is so completely out of our control and grasp that we might as well not even bother. Now, David Suzuki has been in Australia over the past couple of weeks, and I'll get back to this because at the moment we have our news ninja Gene on the line. How you going, Gene? Welcome to the Bruce Birch radio program.
Oh, I'm doing okay. It's good to hear you on the air.
Man, this is fun. You know, I was feeling a little rough this morning, but you know, get a couple minutes into being on air and plugged into the greater consciousness, and I'm feeling great. What can I do for you, mate?
Well, not much. I'm glad you're talking about this topic because really, this is something that's always kind of got me because I remember the first progressive thing I ever went to, and believe it or not, it wasn't quote unquote about the environment, but it really played a big role. And basically, what the guy was, and I wish I could remember the man's name, but he was talking about space and how all the big companies wanted to put all their efforts and everything into that, and kind of leave the rest of us, you know, hanging. And bad fun. I've always felt that basically George Bush and the guys up top, they know that the planet is kind of doomed, and they're doing everything they can to get their butts off of it.
Well, yeah, I don't doubt that, Gene. However, I think there is another aspect to that.
Okay.
That there is still a portion of the population that believes that the environment is looked at as an opportunity for plunder.
Oh,
as
yeah,
opposed
I,
to,
go ahead.
You know, well, as opposed to we are caretakers of the planet version. I kind of like what Steve said, is that we need to consider not that the that ecology resides in the economy, but your economy resides within the ecology. So if you want to have an economy, you need to, however you want to use the term, mother, care for that environment in which your economy resides.
And I don't...
I like that way of thinking. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I don't disagree. It drives me up a wall to see, of all the... Because we talk, like you said, about the election and all the other things, and yet it's like, but we've got the economy or the environment back here as the backdrop that nobody talks about. But it's like, I mean, it just drives me up a wall to see. It's like, why are we? Go ahead.
I'm so with you, Gene. I mean, I seriously, many times a day when watching the mainstream media, I have the impetus to smack my head into a wall over and over and over again. And because it to keep using the same phrase, but it is the grand elephant in the room.
It's the economy.
No one's
stupid. I mean, the ecology is stupid.
Yeah, it's not. You're absolutely right. And all those years of hearing a certain aspect of this population say the environmentalists just don't like business.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? That's a load of horse dookie.
Yeah.
Because they'll label you as naive when in reality you're just being clear thinking, saying, "Hey, mate, we might not agree on all things, but without a functioning ecology, you've got no business, mate."
Yeah, I need to let you go, but I'm gonna leave you with just this. You asked about if that report had made any airplay in the U.S. and as far as I know, the only thing I can find is CBS did something and they mentioned it in passing and then they went right onto the French air car. Now, there is one other story that's kind of been in the background in the Canadian press about with the melting ice and stuff. They're talking that they could start having border disputes with the Americans because the land that used to be there isn't, and they're going to have to rework the border. So...
Global warming is going to be the start of a whole nother excuse for war. Oh, no.
But the
fact is that this is just a fact, and this is the reality that we're facing with the fact that we have ignored the fact that our Mother Nature has this great resiliency, and it will kill off the human race if that's what it takes for Mother Nature to continue.
Yeah, and I'm just hoping that it doesn't. I hope it doesn't come to that, but it. I really worry because, like you said, that thing was 96. It's 2006 now. Isn't that 10 years? Anyway.
Yeah. And the thing is that no major news outfit actually covered it, but. Gene, I really appreciate you calling in. We got to go to our last break before I get out of here and get out of the way for Bob. So,
Okay. Mate,
always really, really good to hear from you, and thanks for everything you do on the blog.
Not a problem. See you.
All right, mate. All right, we're going to take our final break for the Bruce Birch radio program before I get out of the road and let the man pull up the car. All right, everybody, this is the Bruce Birch radio program on the Head On Radio Network. I am John Fox. We'll be back with a few last thoughts and thingies, and we'll be back after this.
You may find yourself living in a shotgun shack, and you may find yourself in another part of the world, and you may find yourself behind the wheel of a large automobile.
A gallon of gas and a gallon of milk. That's what 1 hour of minimum wage work will buy. For nearly a decade, Virginia's minimum wage has remained pitifully low at $5.15 an hour.
When the plant closed, I took this job paying just a little more than the minimum wage. But I still can't support my family. Somebody should raise the bar.
America needs a raise. Help raise the minimum wage. Sign the petition at www.vafairwage.org. Sponsored by the Virginia AFL-CIO, working hard for all working people.
The United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights meet your most complex needs by providing productivity, competitiveness, reliability, accuracy, safety, leadership, and professionalism. Millwrights from the United Brotherhood of Carpenters are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competence and training. The UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business anytime and every time. The Head On Radio Network is proud to be sponsored by these wonderful men and women who are building the American dream every day. Thank you from the Head On Radio Network.
Are you still looking for weapons of mass destruction? Concerned about the future of the Supreme Court? You want to know how government bureaucrats are changing Social Security, overtime pay, or the environment? Maybe you just want to know if the president's lying to you, or when our troops in Iraq can finally come home. I'm Mark Levine. I've got the inside scoop. When you want to know what's going on inside the Beltway, you need a Beltway insider. Someone who's worked in the government and still has sources willing to give you all the news from Washington the government does not want you to know. So for lively debate, reasoned opinion, detailed analysis of history and policy, or just a point of view you don't hear expressed in the mainstream media, tune in to the Inside Scoop. Feel free to call in too. Agree or disagree. All opinions are welcome. It just might make you think. That's the Inside Scoop, weekdays at 2 p.m. Eastern, 1 Central, 11 o'clock Pacific, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
This is the story about a group of kids who volunteered.
We fixed stuff. Did some art projects with the kids.
Cleaned up the park.
We worked in the woods.
I just wanted to do something.
We fixed up this house.
Did something for the planet.
Hey, that was all I needed. And you know what? It was great.
It was a blast.
At first, they didn't know each other.
I didn't know anyone.
Well, that didn't last long.
This guy is really funny.
Me?
These are my new friends. These are really good new friends.
Are you into it?
Are You Into It is a volunteer program for kids like you who care. If you want to make a difference in your community and make friends, call 4-H toll-free at 1-888-77-YOUTH or check out our website at www.areyouintoit.com.
This definitely made a difference.
I feel like I can do everything now.
Yeah!
A public service message brought to you by 4-H, the Cooperative Extension System, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Bruce Burks radio program. John Fox sitting in today, tomorrow, and the following day, if my memory serves me right, which is questionable this morning. But I'm glad you joined me this afternoon. And I'm going to continue on this green thing. And I want to try and explain, maybe not explain, just... As I go through the discovery process, and Gail and I go through the discovery process of how to actually, in your day-to-day life, you know, yeah, we need investment from business, from government, and all this about, you know, finding new ways to power our economy and power our societies. There are real things that you and I can do to seriously make a difference. You know, we've had Rocky Anderson on on the network, and you know, anyone who's actually gone and seen his video presentation at the mayor's website can see how, by some very simple but kind of blanket ideas, you can stop doing as much damage, you know. And I know I'm more fanatical than others, but I don't think that I'm a nutter either. Gail and I have begun looking at every single thing we do and how it's being powered, how far it's coming from. You know, one of the best things you can do to be green is to not only shop locally, but to actually look at where the products, and especially the food you buy, comes from. And the more of it that you can get from within your own state, per se, even if you pay a little bit more for it, I'll almost guarantee you the quality is going to be better. You're not going to be supporting some sort of large behemoth corporation that's, you know, wrecking the farmers' lives. But it will have traveled less distance. And this is like this has a serious impact. You know, the more you think about it, just the fossil fuels burned to get our food to our supermarkets. And why are we moving all this food as opposed to getting locally produced stuff? Well, the profit motive. And I think that, you know, and as Steve said in the interview, environmentalize the pricing. I seriously think that this is what we need to start doing. And just as an example, we are considering here in this house, we've just recently moved, and one of the things that we need to acquire and purchase is a washing machine. And we've been hemming and hawing about, you know, how to go about this. And we're looking very, very likely at installing a hand crank washing tub that will pay for itself in 8 weeks just in the electricity not burned. And that blew me away. You know, the thing costs, something like 70 or 80 Australian dollars. I mean, we're talking, you know, less than 75 bucks U.S. easily. And you could save that much power, that much, you know, we suddenly did the math and sat there and thought, wow, you know, not only is it green, but it could save us a couple hundred bucks a year. And supposedly it does just as good a job, and it takes all of 5 minutes to run. You let use recent sunlight like the sunshine to dry one's clothes, and just think of the footprint. And it takes effort on our part. We have to change how we run our lives, because I reckon there's going to be a point not too far down the road, and it could be in my lifetime, where in developed nations like the United States and Australia, the UK, Germany, we may not have power 24 hours a day. Think about that. And so maybe we got to start thinking about how we can not utilize the power that's on 24 hours a day that we have now. So I'm hoping that, you know, over the next couple of days and in the coming weeks, when at some point I will return to a real schedule, real things that can be done. And regardless of what anybody's saying to you, you can kind of go to bed at night feeling pretty good that you have done everything possible today to not leave a footprint. And I think this is something that we seriously have to do. And before we get out of here, I just got to run through the credits. The program today was produced by the man, Bob Kincaid, who will be up straight here in a couple of minutes, and he's got a Halloween special thingy for you, and I can't wait. And as usual, you know, it's the Mid-Atlantic Council of Carpenters. Thank you, thank you, thank you very much for all that you do and the support of this network. Thank you to Peter Godbold and Godbold Computers, Scott Barry and B1 Louder Productions, who has made a music donation, which you'll be feeling the impacts of very, very soon. And just to you, the listeners, thanks for being here. We'll see you tomorrow. Keeping the chair warm for Bruce. This is John Fox on the Bruce Birch Radio Program. We'll see you tomorrow. Stick around for Bob.
When the dust all settled, the sun shone so bright, and a great calm took over us like it was all gonna be alright. That's how it felt to be alive after the revolution. From Groton to Tacoma, on many a factory floor, the workers talked of solidarity and refused to build weapons of war. No more will we make missiles. We're gonna do something different. And for the first time, their children were proud of their somewhere in Gaza, a little boy smiled and cried. After the revolution, prison doors swung open.
$1 per ounce. If you'd like to find out more about Nova Gold, then log on to their website at www.novagold.net or check them out on the American Stock Exchange, symbol NG.
This is the Global American Network.
This is the Quality News Network. Two more American soldiers have been killed in Iraq, bringing the total death toll for the U.S. military this month to 103. Since the Iraq War began, at least 2,816 American soldiers have been killed. In Washington, Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld said that he may approve a joint U.S.-Iraqi plan to increase Iraqi security forces. Rumsfeld did not specify the size of the increase, but it could be up to 100,000 new troops, according to CBS television. There are currently 150,000 U.S. troops in Iraq. In Baghdad today, 11 people were killed when a suicide bomber struck a Shiite wedding party. 21 others, including several children, were wounded. And in Sadr City, 3 people were killed and 5 others were wounded in a car bombing today. Police say a car bombing yesterday in Sadr City killed 33 people. According to the Associated Press, 1,170 Iraqi civilians have died in the war this month alone. In Pakistan, in response to the air raid that killed 80 people yesterday at a religious school that was often visited by al-Qaeda leaders, thousands of pro-Taliban tribesmen held a rally and threatened revenge. 20,000 people took part in that demonstration, which was one of several across Pakistan to denounce the raid. A Pakistani official, speaking on condition of anonymity, told ABC News that the attack was launched after intelligence reports suggested incorrectly that al-Qaeda's second-in-command may have been visiting the school. After pulling out 11 months ago, North Korea will return to six-party talks about its nuclear program, according to American, South Korean, and Chinese officials. The talks are expected to resume in November or December. President Bush said that he is very pleased with the news. However, U.S. Ambassador John Bolton said that this return to talks was not enough to lift the U.N. sanctions imposed after North Korea's recent nuclear test. The National Journal reports an increase in the number of bloggers who are being paid by Democratic and Republican campaigns to write in favor of their candidates. Some bloggers are being paid several thousand dollars a month for their services. In Greece today, at the first ever UN Global Internet Forum, a human rights group criticized Western companies for providing the Chinese with technology that limits freedom of expression on the Chinese Internet. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Science and business news are next.
Most
people would rather have a root canal than go to a dealer to buy a car. But you can turn dread into joy when you learn how to play the car buying game. Read the book, Right Car, Right Price, and you'll discover how the game is played and how you can win every time. Whether you're buying a car or a truck, new or used, Right Car, Right Price explains how to find and buy the vehicle best suited to your individual transportation needs. Auto Week called Right Car, Right Price the right stuff. So take the hassle out of car buying. Read Right Car, Right Price, and every time you get into your new car, you'll know you've got a great deal. Go online to rightcarrightprice.com to order your copy today. It only takes an hour to read Right Car, Right Price, and it just costs $10. We even pay the postage. So go to rightcarrightprice.com right now. It'll be one of the best decisions you ever make.
Reuters News Service reports that a diving crew in North Carolina has found what they believe to be Blackbeard's pirate ship. The ship was lost in 1718 and has been the subject of treasure hunting expeditions for centuries. Divers have recovered cannons, a ship's bell, gold dust, and other items that may help them link the ship to Blackbeard. Scottish researchers have discovered the first gene linked to schizophrenia. In a study of 200 people, researchers found that abnormal brain activity and a specific genetic mutation were associated with schizophrenia. Mental health professionals hope that this discovery may lead to effective treatments for the disease. Microsoft is suing 55 online dealers in 10 countries who sell counterfeit Microsoft software on sites such as eBay. Microsoft contends that counterfeit software is often infected with viruses and spyware and makes identity theft easier. In another blow to Sony this month, the U.S. Justice Department has launched an antitrust probe into the company's sales of its static random access memory chips. Sony's quarterly profit had already fallen 94% due to its recall of millions of lithium batteries and low video game sales. Light Sweet crude is trading at $58.62 a barrel, and at the close of Wall Street today, the Dow Jones closed down 6 points at 12,081, the Nasdaq was up 3 at 2367, and the S&P 500 was flat at 1378. There's more at qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm
AmeriMergen.
Now, Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it, so call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Howdy! Or should I say, well, howdy, blah. I'm Bob. Happy Halloween. Happy Samhain. Igor, help me with the bags.
All right, you take the blonde and I'll take the one with the Toybin.
Okay, so it is Halloween, and you know, I am told that this was the period marked as the beginning of the new year by my Celtic ancestors. And I can't help reflecting on the fact that it's when you get down to the Druids and the Celts and things like that. I can't blame the early church for this one because among other people, Julius Caesar marched through and slaughtered every Druid he could lay his hands on because they thought my people a little bit odd, strange, you know, painting themselves blue, going into battle naked with pitch and tar in their hair and lighting their own hair on fire and screaming and running. You know, we had the mob mentality down pat early on. If we'd had a little bit of military discipline, we really might have dealt differently with Julius Caesar and several others. And several did, the Germanic tribes handed a butt-whipping to successive Roman armies. But that's my culture. That's my culture that was taken away from us eons ago, and we had it replaced with an entirely different cultural paradigm. So I have no idea what the religious practices of my forebears were up until Roman Catholicism, and then Calvinism got a hold of it. And Calvinism doesn't bring out the best in the Scots character. At least, not by my lights. But this is, I suppose this would be a high holy day for my forebears, 1,000, 1,500, 2,000 years ago. So, happy Celtic New Year? Is that what this is? Okay. But I thought we'd have a little fun with things tonight. A little reading here, a little reading there, and I don't have any Edgar Allan Poe for you. I don't have any H.P. Lovecraft. I don't have any Stephen King. I went in a different direction. Sorry, Halloween. Little chaos in the studio. But anyway. So I do have something for you. To wit, there are strange things done in the midnight sun by the men who moil for gold. The Arctic trails have their secret tales that would make your blood run cold. The northern lights have seen queer sights, but the queerest they ever did see was the night that on the marge of Lake Lebarge I cremated Sam McGee. Now Sam McGee was from Tennessee, where the cotton blooms and blows. Why he left his home in the South to roam round the pole, God only knows. He was always cold, but the land of gold seemed to hold him like a spell, though he'd often say in his homely way that he'd sooner live in hell. On a Christmas day, we were mushing our way over the Dawson Trail. Talk of your cold! Through the parka's fold, it stabbed like a driven nail. If our eyes we'd closed, then the lashes froze, till sometimes we couldn't see. It wasn't much fun, but the only one to whimper was Sam McGee. And that very night, as we lay packed tight in our robes beneath the snow, and the dogs were fed and the stars overhead were dancing heel and toe, he turned to me and, "Cap," says he, "I'll cash in this trip, I guess, and if I do, I'm asking that you won't refuse my last request." Well, he seemed so low that I couldn't say no. Then he says with a sort of moan, "It's the cursed cold, and it's got right hold till I'm chilled clean through to the bone. Yet 'tain't being dead, it's my awful dread of the icy grave that pains. So I want you to swear that foul or fair, you'll cremate my last remains." A pal's last need is a thing to heed, so I swore I would not fail. And we started on at the streak of dawn, but God, he looked ghastly pale. He crouched on the sleigh, and he raved all day of his home in Tennessee. And before nightfall, a corpse was all that was left of Sam McGee. There wasn't a breath in that land of death, and I hurried, horror-driven, with a corpse half-hid that I couldn't get rid because of a promise given. It was lashed to the sleigh, and it seemed to say, "You may tax your brawn and brains, but you promised true, and it's up to you to cremate these last remains." Now, a promise made is a debt unpaid, and the trail has its own stern code. In the days to come, though my lips were dumb, in my heart, how I cursed that load. In the long, long night, by the lone firelight, while the huskies, round in a ring, howled out their woes to the homeless snows. Oh, God, how I loathed the thing! And every day that quiet clay seemed to heavy and heavier grow. And on I went, though the dogs were spent and the grub was getting low. The trail was bad, and I felt half mad, but I swore I would not give in, and I'd often sing to the hateful thing, and it hearkened with a grin. Till I came to the marge of Lake Lebarge, and a derelict there lay. It was jammed in the ice, but I saw in a trice it was called the Alice May. And I looked at it, and I thought a bit, and I looked at my frozen chum. Then, "Here," said I with a sudden cry, "is my crematorium!" Some planks I tore from the cabin floor, and I lit the boiler fire. Some coal I found that was lying around, and I heaped the fuel higher. The flames just soared, and the furnace roared. Such a blaze you seldom see, and I burrowed a hole in the glowing coal, and I stuffed in Sam McGee. Then I made a hike, for I didn't like to hear him sizzle so. And the heavens scowled, and the huskies howled, and the wind began to blow. It was icy cold, but the hot sweat rolled down my cheeks, and I don't know why, and the greasy smoke in an inky cloak went streaking down the sky. I do not know how long in the snow I wrestled with grisly fear, but the stars came out, and they danced about ere again I ventured near. I was sick with dread. But I bravely said, "I'll just take a peep inside. I guess he's cooked. And it's time I looked." Then the door I opened wide. And there sat Sam, looking cool and calm, in the heart of the furnace roar. And he wore a smile you could see a mile, and he said, "Please close that door. It's fine in here, but I greatly fear you'll let in the cold and storm. Since I left Plumtree down in Tennessee, it's the first time I've been warm." There are strange things done in the midnight sun by the men who moil for gold. The Arctic trails have their secret tales that would make your blood run cold. The northern lights have seen queer sights, but the queerest they ever did see was that night on the marge of Lake Lebarge. I cremated Sam McGee. Robert W. Service. A chestnut, if ever there was one, but a little something out of the ordinary, and I've got a couple of other ones out of the ordinary. We'll do one maybe at the top of each hour. Now, that was fun. But, you know, there's that old joke about the guy who dies and goes to hell, and the devil is leading him around and giving him a choice of torment. And in the first instance, he opens the door and he shows the damned soul into a room that's a hard concrete floor. And everyone in there is spending all eternity standing on their heads on that concrete floor. And the moaning is terrible, and the agony and the wailing. And the devil looks at the guy and says, is this what you want? There's another room. Is this what you want? The guy's looking, and the damned soul's eyeballs are bugged out, and they're all red and purple in the face from standing on there. I mean, there's presidents and cardinals and popes and all manner of, you know, Genghis Khan standing, and everybody just miserable. And he goes, I don't want to be in here. He goes, okay. And devil goes, okay, we'll go to the other room. And they open the door. And in the next room is a room that is absolutely knee-deep in poop. But in this room, all the people, popes and cardinals and presidents and kings and queens and princes and murderers and cutthroats and cutpurses and rapists, father stabbers and mother rapers, they're all there and they're standing knee-deep in poop drinking coffee. And the guy looks at him, obviously this is the better deal. So he says, I'll take this one. So he wades into the nasty room, and it's pretty foul and stinking. But he's standing there, and he gets his first cup of coffee. He's standing there, saucer in his left hand, little demi-tasse coffee cup in his right. And just as he raises the coffee cup to his lips for the first sip, a little demon walks in and says, all right, coffee break's over. Back on your heads. Well, that's kind of where we are right now. Fun's over. Coffee break's over. Back on your heads. Because there's some sick crap out there tonight. And, you know, I guess it doesn't take much of a prophet to say that Republicans being Republicans and rattlesnakes being rattlesnakes, they're going to do what Republicans do and what rattlesnakes do, and that these last 7 days, now I guess we would officially say that it's closer to six and change before the election, are going to be sleazy, 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 sleazy. Nasty. What do I mean? Well, there's the John Kerry thing. You know, yesterday, John Kerry's in Los Angeles, and he tries to tell a joke. Memo to John Kerry, leave the jokes to the professionals. You be a senator. And he winds up saying that if you don't study hard in school, you wind up in Iraq. And Lord God, Billy Bob, the White House jumped on that like ducks on June bugs. And Tony Snow's out there, sleazy and smarmy, and he's saying things like, well, you know, John Kerry has a habit of disrespecting the troops. John Kerry obviously doesn't care much about the troops. John Kerry constantly insults our fighting men and women. I think John Kerry owes an apology to the fighting men and women who are defending our freedom in Iraq. Now, of course, anybody in their right mind knows that that's not what John Kerry was talking about. He blew the joke. I knew a young woman one time. Okay, here's the story. String walks into a bar. And he looks at the bartender and he says, give me a beer. Bartender says, hey, we don't serve string in here. Get out. So the string, dejected and still very much wanting a beer, leaves the bar, walks down the sidewalk, and he sees a guy selling combs on the sidewalk. And so he flips the guy a quarter, takes the string, reaches up to the takes the comb, reaches up to the top of the string, and teases it out till it's all fluffy at the top of the string. And then he loops himself around and comes back under and goes through the loop and pulls himself tight. And turns around, goes back up the street, walks in the bar, and says, I'll have a beer. And the bartender says, hey, aren't you that string I just threw out of here a little bit ago? The string looks at the bartender and goes, no, I'm afraid not. I know. It's terrible. But there's a point to this. I knew a young woman many years ago, and we were sitting at a... And I had told this little joke, this little chestnut, this really bad little pun, in front of her. And she thought it was the funniest thing she had ever heard in her life. I mean, she cackled like she was good, like a hen getting ready to lay an egg. And so we're sitting at lunch with some other people. And she looks over and goes, "Hey, Bob!
Yeah?
Tell the frayed knot joke." John Kerry is that young woman. You know, a sense of humor that doesn't register on any scientific... It's just... It's so low, it's immeasurable. You know, biggest pratfall... You could sit down with John Kerry and watch A Night at the Opera with the Marx Brothers. Among the funniest films ever made. And, you know, during the really funny parts, John might go, "Ah." Now, I'm not trying to be too hard on John Kerry, but he had a point to make. And don't try to make it with humor. You can't tell jokes about people, 100 of whom have been slaughtered because George Bush is a lying, miserable, failure, incompetent boob. It's not going to work. It's like telling a 9/11 joke. There aren't any. It's like a Timothy McVeigh joke. There aren't any Timothy McVeigh jokes either. John Kerry wasn't slurring the troops. John Kerry was making a very, very simple point that became a little too complicated. And it was a George Bush joke. You know, it's like saying, "How many Republicans does it take to screw in a light bulb?" And the answer is, "What, they're screwing the light bulbs now?" Some people can do that, others can't. John Kerry needs to talk about policy and give long-winded speeches. And now, since Tony Snow came out and just really, really rubbed his nose in it, John Kerry came out today and just delivered this beautiful, and I do mean beautiful, jeremiad against the Republican Party. I'll have it here in front of me in just a second. But he took what Tony Snow said, turned it sideways, and jammed it up Tony Snow's nether regions. And good for him for doing it. And every time John Kerry does something like that, I am filled with a profound sense of wistfulness. Because, yeah, I do remember when he didn't do this in 2004. I remember when he was sailboarding off of Martha's Vineyard. I remember the photographs of John Kerry in the sperm suit. And I wish to God he had... But here's what he said. This is a quote. "If anyone thinks a veteran would criticize the more than 140,000 heroes serving in Iraq and not the president who got us stuck there, they're crazy. I'm not going to be lectured by a stuffed suit White House mouthpiece standing behind a podium, or doughy Rush Limbaugh, who no doubt today will take a break from belittling Michael J. Fox's Parkinson's disease to start lying about me just as they have lied about Iraq." Good on you, John Kerry. Good to see you figured out the fighting spirit. But can I ask a hard question? Is John Kerry up for re-election? Maybe he is. One of you Massachusetts people can help. Is John Kerry up for re-election? What the hell's he doing campaigning in Los Angeles? Now, I'm not trying to be a jerk about this. But we had Flush Flimball on the ropes. We had him in a position where he couldn't open his mouth. Yeah, well, the last time he opened his mouth, if you've been following it, his last complaint, "My friends, they speeded up the camera on me to make my movements on camera look like I was shaking more than I was and talking about Michael J. Fox." No, they didn't. You're not speeding anything up when you go watch it on YouTube or elsewhere. It's there. And he's, you know, he's straight out of that old, line from Clement Moore's poem, you know, and when he laughed, he shook like a bowl full of jelly. Yeah, that's Rush Limbaugh, and it didn't have to be slowed down or speeded up. It was disgusting. And we had him in a box for the next damn week. Guess what? Flush Limbaugh's not in the box anymore because, unfortunately, John Kerry let him out. Now, you can take issue with me, and that's fine. I'm not trying to give John Kerry a hard time. But I know how these thugs, these monsters, these unmitigated bastards operate. And you know what? It's not going to go away in a day. It's not going to go away in 2 days. Do you remember when Dick Durbin, senator from Illinois, made a perfectly reasonable comment that some of the horrors that we were hearing about in Iraq, if you didn't know they were being done by American soldiers, you'd swear it was the Russians or the Nazis? And they... Ooh! 2 weeks! When is Senator Durbin going to apologize for slurring our troops? And eventually... he apologized. Senator Durbin did. And now if you go over to MSNBC, there's a poll there that says basically, was John Kerry wrong for what he said, or was he really, 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 really wrong, and why does John Kerry hate our troops? God. You know, I mean, look, it's my foot. I'm going to shoot it. Let's go to the phones. Ben is with us. Hey, Ben, welcome to the program.
Hey there, Bob.
How are you?
Yeah, you know why they don't tell Jonestown jokes anymore?
Why is that?
The punchlines are too long.
Boom, boom. Oh, that was restaurant quality. Yeah, that's like why they took Mark Foley's Library of Congress card away.
He kept turning over pages?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jesus. But, I mean, is this... am I off base with Kerry on this?
Maybe just a little. Because, you know, right now the Republicans are so damn desperate, they are looking for anything. They have been sitting there waiting for somebody to mispronounce a word or stutter or say that George Bush is a jerk or any one of a number of other things that they could use, and they just happened to catch Kerry.
Well, did they just happen to catch him, or did he... put himself kind of out there, and I mean, I'm not,
it's like the Dean scream. It was totally out of context.
Yeah, that, yeah.
Anyone who heard the whole thing would have understood what it was.
Well, yeah, and the kids in the audience that he was talking, they laughed.
Yeah, they got it. It was a total, you can, you know, I can find 10 words that any politician says in a row that would make them sound like the worst thing since Attila the Hun. Okay? If you take them out of context. And that is exactly what we're seeing. We're seeing things taken out of context. I heard a radio ad today slurring a friend of mine who's running for state senate here saying that he supports marijuana legalization. Well, you know, I know his position on this pretty well. And it ain't legalization he's supporting. He's supporting decriminalization for first offenses, and that is a very different thing.
Well, it certainly is.
Okay? Very, very different. You know, treat it as a status violation and a first offense and give a fine. And the reason for this is because, well, he's a lawyer, and he knows what it costs the state. He knows intimately what it costs the state to prosecute somebody for a gram of marijuana. And it ain't worth it.
No.
It's over $18,000 to do that prosecution. And then if there's jail time, okay, and the fine never matches that. And then if there's jail time, you know, we're talking $3,000 a week to keep somebody in the Illinois penitentiary.
Jesus. You know, but how do you explain that in a 30-second radio commercial?
Exactly right. So you take things... the Republicans are great at this. They take out of context, they distort, they lie. You know, there's a number of different ways you can tell a lie. You know, there's like this whole series of, you know, lies of omission, lies of commission, you know, a whole series of ways you can lie and commit logical fallacies in speech that, you know, were actually, you know, St. Augustine laid them all out in great detail at one point, so that, you know, they could be, you know, carefully understood by people who were going to be, you know, speaking and debating, so that you'd know when you were confronted with such a lie and how to deal with it. And Republicans are masters of every single one of those.
Yeah, they work at it.
They
don't take years off, Ben. They don't take days off. There is a machine that goes nonstop, 36 hours a day, 12 days a week, every day of the blessed year. And that's, you know, that's what makes him, makes this thing with Kerry. He's already been swift boated.
Right.
Surely to God he knew that coming out right now and trying to take on George Bush with a little one-liner dig. In football parlance, it's not a high percentage play.
No, it wasn't, and it was a tactical error on his part. But you know, John Kerry, you know, does not represent the Democratic Party. John Kerry represents John Kerry.
And
arguably, John Kerry represents the people of the state of Massachusetts and John Kerry. But John Kerry doesn't represent me. John Kerry doesn't represent you. John Kerry doesn't represent, you know, Tammy Duckworth running here in Illinois, who they're lying about.
Boy, they jumped on that in a hurry, though. Did you hear Tony Snow saying, well, you know, we need to ask Tammy Duckworth if she agrees with John Kerry's position? You know, this is all, I mean, and the shame of it all, Ben, is this comes out of an old Democratic playbook, truth be told. I mean, you know the old story about LBJ, right?
Oh yeah, I just want to hear him deny it.
I just want to hear him deny it.
Exactly right.
And now we're running around denying it.
Well, you know, we need to turn it around, and I really think I want to hear somebody ask Dennis Hastert. I want to hear somebody ask Dennis Hastert on TV with the cameras rolling the following question. Mr. Hastert, what do you say to allegations that you had inappropriate conduct with students when you were a high school wrestling coach in 1978?
I just want to hear him deny it.
Point is, that one might have been true.
Well, yeah, it may have been.
But, yeah, I just want to hear
him. And it was in a parochial.
And it's a legitimate question because it's the reason he lost his very first race here for Illinois State Legislature. He lost because of those allegations. And
exactly.
They were never addressed.
Well, you know, there's some of this. We're seeing some interesting poll numbers come out. The Rasmussen poll came out today that said Jim Webb is now 4 points ahead of George Allen. You know, George Allen, who had his people mug, what's his name, Mike Stark from callingallwingnuts.com. He went down to an appearance. Have you seen this?
Yes, I have.
Yeah, he asks him what
it was, assault and battery.
Yeah, why did you spit on your wife? And the Allen thugs just tackled him. I guess
Yeah. They
weren't gonna have they weren't gonna make it possible for George to say anything and create another macaca moment.
Well, what they did was assault and battery, and they ought to be prosecuted.
Yeah, they should be.
I really think there ought to be some jail time for this.
I mean, I've seen the video. I'm sure you have too. It's a hell of a thing. Kind of makes me wish we were doing TV.
I could go into a courtroom and convict with that video.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't think there is a single prosecutor in the land who is so inept that he could not get a conviction for assault and battery on the basis of that video alone. The only thing you could ever hope for if you were a defense lawyer in that case would be to rule the video out.
That would be your only hope, you know, and that's what's frustrating. We got that, not that's buried because we're talking about, you know, because the mainstream media wants to talk about John Kerry. Have you seen this MSNBC poll yet, Ben?
I don't visit that site because I really can't afford to replace the screen on this computer.
You mean when you have to go get the Elvis gun?
Yeah.
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 I know. Well, was John Kerry's, were John Kerry's remarks appropriate? Yes. Soldiers are stupid. No. He shouldn't have said it, and it was taken out of context. And yes, and there are people actually voting yes, soldiers are stupid.
No, they're not.
I mean, the media has gotten hold of this, and you know, I'm discussing it now. Shame on me. But you know, we've got the tackle today. What else is out there? Jim Talent going into Southern Missouri trying to stir up the snake handlers.
I will say this in the defense of the people who say yes, soldiers are stupid. You know, if you join the military any time in the last 3 years, there's at least some doubt as to your sanity.
That's true.
Yeah, but by the same token, what do you tell the kid who just got out of high school who lives in busted knuckle Wyoming, who is either going to sit there and do nothing with no job and no way of supporting himself and no future, no college, no nothing. Or, you know, he hears the siren song of the recruiter and says, well, if I, you know, not getting killed is really the key to the benefits plan.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that benefits plan is going to be canceled as soon as this brouhaha is over. The Republicans absolutely have no intention of going through with the benefit.
Well, there's another story out there that deserves some mention, Ben. And since I've got you here on the phone for a second, I'll share it with you. We'll listen to it together. One of the other things that's getting covered up in the John Kerry fracas is Pickles Bush's transmogrification, Halloween appropriate, into apparently Babs. She was asked about the Michael J. Fox flap. Did you see this?
No.
Oh, well, just listen because, you know, and then have the bucket handy.
One of the issues that's come up, Michael J. Fox, the whole issue of stem cell research, your reaction to the events of the past week.
Well, I don't have any idea about any of those. I mean, I've watched on television just like you have. But the fact is President Bush is the only president who's authorized funding for stem cell research. And, you know, it's an issue that's easy to try to manipulate people's feelings about, and I understand that. My dad died of Alzheimer's. There's nothing I would like more than to think there was a cure for Alzheimer's, and especially before I get to be the age he is, but knowing also how he suffered. But, you know, it's always easy to manipulate people's feelings especially when you're talking about diseases that are so difficult.
Got that? This wasn't about a cure. This was about manipulating people's feelings. Michael J. Fox doesn't want to get cured. He just wants to manipulate people's feelings.
Yeah, Christopher Reeve didn't want to be cured either.
Yeah, that whole thing in the wheelchair, big act.
Yeah, the ventilator. Nope.
That was fake.
Yeah, absolutely.
And
Ronald Reagan, he was faking the Alzheimer's.
Yeah, absolutely. Sharp as a tack till the day he died.
Absolutely. Sharp as a tack till the day he died, just so that Nancy could come out there afterwards and support stem cell research, which she did.
And this is last Saturday. I mean, this is fairly new. Is anybody out there talking about what a cruel, heartless thing Laura Bush is?
Well, you know what else is I think that Rush Limbaugh is faking impotence when he goes down to Caribbean countries for those sex tours.
Oh, dude, those Viagras were taken for the little. He took those for the little boys, not for himself.
That's right. It was actually him helping them. Okay,
This is just sickening. It is just sickening, Ben.
Rush Limbaugh's back problem.
Oh,
His back never hurt. This was just him manipulating his doctor's emotions so they'll give him Oxycontin.
But sadly, you know, we're talking about this, the rest of the world having an orgy over John Kerry. And I caught some of the CNN coverage of it, Ben. That was enough to really bring up dinner, and I'm not even going to play it. But there, Ed Hoosis, that covers the White House part of the time when somebody else isn't there, he said, well, you know, the White House is really spoiling for a fight with John Kerry. They can't wait to get out there with John Kerry now because they're really going to mash him up.
He's not running for anything.
No, he's not.
He's not running for anything. And you know what else? You know, I really think that you know, we ought to talk about who's running from whom here. You know, clearly the Republican Party is running from George Bush's legacy. They're running from Dennis Hastert's legacy, and they're running from their record. They're not running on their record. They're not running on their achievement. They're not running. They are running away from their achievements. They are running away from their legacies. They have absolutely been the worst administration and the worst Congress and the worst Senate the United States has had since at least the 1850s.
Well,
and we know how that ended.
Not prettily.
No. And, you know, part of me hopes it ends that way now.
I just don't know anymore. All I know is we got, you know, 6 days and change left. The 6 days where all we have to do is keep on message.
And that's what we need to do. So drop this topic and let us talk about the Republicans running away from all the things that they have done and claiming things that they claiming, like Laura Bush claiming support for stem cell research, when in fact that is the exact opposite, the precise opposite of what their record is.
Well, and of course it is. It is.
Okay. Yeah. They're the only thing that comes out of Republicans' mouth, you know, a Republican's mouth are lies. Absolutely. Without any doubt. And that has to be our big message, is that if a Republican is speaking to you, he is lying to you.
If his lips are moving.
That's right.
There's some lying going on. Ben, thanks.
You take care, sir.
Bye now. All right. And Susan in Columbia City, Oregon. Hey, Susan. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Bab.
How are you?
Happy sewing.
Happy sewing to you, too. Our cultural new year.
Yes. I was calling about your old Babs-to-be.
Yeah, disgusting, isn't she?
Yes. I just wanted to mention that she is, in fact, right when she said it's easy to manipulate emotions. She found that out when she ran down her boyfriend and killed him and got away with it.
Yeah, and when her cousin-in-law recently wiped out a cop in...
And got away with it. And then, of course, they're very good at manipulating emotions concerning abortion, race, Iraq, xenophobia, patriotism, all sorts of goodies.
Well, you know, we kind of had Flush Flimball in a corner for a while. He came out, I think maybe it was yesterday, and said, my friends, I was completely accurate on the Michael J. Fox or on the Harold Ford issue because, as it turns out, he is dating a white woman or has dated a white woman. It's a legitimate issue.
Who gives a rip?
Right. Only the sickest and most twisted. But again, Chris Floyd, our friend who's appeared on the program a couple of times, Chris had an excellent piece at Truth Out today, in which he references his Southern heritage, and he talks about the fact that the ads against Harold Ford with the Harold Call Me and the jungle drums and all of that stuff were sleazy and reprehensible, and more than anything else, it appears they have worked.
Oh, yeah, I'm not surprised.
Because if the margin of election is 1%, all you need is the weird little pillowcase crowd.
Right.
And you're over the top.
Speaking as the mother of a daughter... If she came home with a man and she she said, Mom, I'm going to marry him, and he was black, I would have a couple of questions.
And they would be?
Is he a good man? Does he love you?
Right.
In that case, go for it.
With your blessings.
You bet.
Sure. Sure.
And I don't care if he's purple with pink polka dots. I know that's what matters. And I've only got the one daughter, so she is very, very precious to me. So
yeah.
That racial crap doesn't wash.
No. No. And it shouldn't. It shouldn't with anyone. But unfortunately, we're talking about the old Confederacy. You know, there hasn't been an African American senator from Tennessee since Reconstruction.
Yeah, I had the misfortune to live in the South before segregation was outlawed, and coming from Washington, Seattle, Washington, it was a monster shock. Culture shock was not describe it.
That had to be.
Yeah, because, you know, I was a school kid, and I kept asking my parents, Mommy, why can't I play with so-and-so? And they would say, well, I don't know. And it turned out because they were black.
Jesus.
You know, and...
Yeah, and this is 2006, and we're still dealing with this issue.
But the big thing to me is what dear old Pickle said. Now, I got one other point to make.
Go right ahead.
Pickle's got something you should think about. Alzheimer's runs in families. Think about it.
Well, apparently she was, because in that clip she says, you know, and I would certainly like to see a cure before I get to the age he was.
Well, you should maybe think about people.
Well, maybe she should talk to her husband about the fact that that stem cell research that he says, or that she says he's the only president ever to have funded, lie.
Are contaminated.
Yeah, contaminated with mouse genetics.
Yeah.
I mean, no. I mean, that's like Island of Dr. Moreau stuff. Oh, there's a creepy story we could have gone into tonight.
Oh, yes.
But yeah, I mean, these are, what good is a stem cell line that's corrupted with mouse DNA?
Uh-huh.
And it is. I mean, there's no debate about it. It simply is.
And here's something that I happened to think of last night. You see on, or at least where I am, you see these commercials for this cord blood bank.
Mm-hmm.
Where people can bank their baby's cord blood, which means stem cell.
Yeah. Oh, we're really, really on top of that one, Susan, because back in the dark ages, this would be 1997, my mother passed away.
Yeah.
And that was at the same time that our youngest was born. And Agnes begged my mother's treating physicians to let her donate our baby's cord blood, and they wouldn't have anything to do with it.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah, I mean, so I'm sympathetic to all of that, and I'm up for research on adult stem cells.
Well, what gets me is, okay, these are live babies; they're perfectly healthy. These cords are being tossed in the garbage, so why not provide a central repository with the government funds for anybody who needs them? Because let's face it, most people can't afford the cost of banking a baby's cord blood.
Right. But you know, that would be government doing things that are responsive and realistic.
That would be sensible.
Yeah, it would be. Susan, thank you so much, and a very happy little evening to you as well.
Yeah, you too. I do have one request.
Okay.
If anyone in the readership, in the listenership area, has any ability to work with cover letters for because I'm helping a lady in Jackson County with a resume and cover letter, and I'm not too hot with cover letters. I'm good with resumes, but I'm not too hot with cover letters. And I could use some help.
Okay. You guys got that? If you're good with cover letters, write to me. I'll turn it around to Susan.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, Susan.
You have a nice night.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. And to our good friend Roy, calling from Texas. Hey, Roy, welcome to the program.
What do you say today?
I say it's a mess. I say that these daggum Republicans are a bunch of sleazy, no good, lying, no count, snake's belly in a wagon rut SOBs.
Yep. Well, old Charlie Rangel, he didn't make any bones about Dick Cheney being a son of a bitch. That's what he called him today.
I'm proud of Charlie Rangel.
Yeah. Well. Yeah.
You know, I'm up for these people fighting back. It's just fighting back and managing not to step on anything in the process that's kind of important.
Yeah.
A miss is as good as a mile.
But, just like the flap, they're trying to just act like it's the end of the world. The next thing to gay marriage or something like that, John Kerry stepping on his tongue yesterday and saying the wrong thing. He really was making a joke and has tried to explain that. And then Snow, Bush, all of them come out just screaming, McCain, that he's got to apologize. And Kerry comes back and says, Bush is the one that needs to be apologizing to the troops for putting them in that situation. And so I guess the way I see it, it just kind of proves that they ain't got nothing else to run on. They just got to jump on anything and run all of these sleazy, scuzzy ads. Racist, any whatever they can dig up and try to hold on.
Whatever they can use, Roy, to drag out people that they are pretty well convinced are going to stay home on Election Day.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because whether it's the racists or the religiously bigoted, those people have begun to see the lights come on, and they see no reason to come out in this election. And George and Carl have, by God, got to have them.
Mm-hmm.
And they will get those people out if they have to go and light individual crosses to bring them.
Yeah,
makes me sick.
It is very sickening, and to have to read it, watch it, hear it. Yeah, I mean, it's just over and over. But Kerry said this afternoon, and I was glad he said it. He was talking about old Tony Snow and old Rush Limbaugh. He said, I'm not going to be lectured to by some White House mouthpiece stiff behind a podium or doughboy down in Florida about this deal.
And that's the appropriate response.
Yeah. But all of the media, they've tried to pick up on it like it's just the brand new Swift boat.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you pay attention to the mainstream media, it's, you know, John Kerry's saying rotten things about the soldiers' mamas.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. But,
So you know we've got a little job in front of us if we hear it talked about outside the context of this program in the grocery store line at the gas pump whatever we've got a job in front of us to explain that away.
Yep. But seen another little real cute thing. They said, "Whoa, gasoline started back up yesterday." Hell yes, it starts back up. They're not going to keep it down.
Right. No. That's just a little shot across the bow, Roy. That's us finding out that, you know, things could get worse if we let, you know.
Yeah.
And yeah, let those demon, well, they're demoncrats. Isn't that what we are, demoncrats?
Yeah. Oh, my God. But it is just pathetic that they do not have one damn thing to run on. And everybody's running away from Bush except just a handful of hardcore that he's trying to get.
Well, by golly, he got a stir. Where was he today? I did say he was live somewhere delivering a bunch of his putrid babbling somewhere this afternoon around 5 o'clock Eastern.
But, he was in Georgia.
Yeah, okay, that's what I thought, Georgia, and but even there, he has to be among the faithful.
Yeah, but the front page is for a week now here. The Dallas Morning News has been talking about Gay Bailey Hutchinson has all of a sudden got scared, and she was with Bush at Sugarland yesterday. And they're saying that it's still a long shot that this lady could unseat her, but they're looking over their shoulder and they're running scared.
Well, I want them to stay that way.
That would literally croak them if okay Bailey was to get beat.
Oh, God, that would be wonderful. Because she's insane. I mean, Cornyn makes her look sane, but she's sane. She's crazy, too.
Well, Cornyn is just a pure rubber stamp, ignorant Tom DeLay type. That's all they are.
Yep, and the sooner we clean the lot of them out, the better off we are.
Yeah.
Roy, good to talk to you, and hope to talk to you soon. We've got to go to the top of the hour news.
Good deal.
All right, bye now.
Goodbye.
Our good friend Roy from Texas, common sense from the heart of the Lone Star State. It's time for news. Let's do some of that. This is the Head-On Radio Network, another creepy story at the top of the hour. I'm Bob Kincaid.
In the lab late one night, when my eyes beheld an eerie sight, for my monster from his slab began to rise, and suddenly, to my surprise,
he did the mash.
He did the monster mash.
The monster mash.
It was a graveyard smash.
He did the mash.
It caught on in a flash.
He did the mash.
He did the monster mash. From my laboratory in the castle east, to the master bedroom where the vampires feast, the ghouls all came from their humble abode to get a jolt from my electrode.
They did the mash.
They did the monster mash.
The monster mash.
It was a graveyard smash.
They did the mash.
That's the worst monthly toll since January of 2005 and the fourth highest of the war. The U.S. Air Force is requesting $50 billion in emergency funding for fiscal 2007. A defense analyst says that request comes from Deputy Secretary of Defense Gordon England, who told the U.S. Armed Services to include the longer war on terror in their emergency requests, not just funding for the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. In California yesterday, former presidential candidate Senator John Kerry made controversial remarks about U.S. troops in a speech to students. He told them to study hard or they would, quote, get